Welcome to the Pop Culture Pod Podcast. Now let's begin.
Podcast listener, and welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. I'm your host. My name is Chris Lockhart, and joining me for this episode, this is our Deep Space Nine discussion, season 3.5. So once again, we have the Deep Space Nine discussion panel assembled, and first up, we have Ragnar. How's it going, Ragnar?
Hey, good. Hello, everyone.
And next, we have Curtis Holmey. How's it going, Curtis?
Just fantastic, sir.
Excellent. And last but not least, we have Richard Szabo. How's it going, Richard?
Not bad. Good to be back again. Can't wait to get into this.
Excellent. All right, so on our last episode of the Deep Space Nine discussion panel, we left off with life support, where, unfortunately, Vedic Barile passed away. So now we're moving on to episode 60 of the series, 14th of the season. And that's Heart of Stone, Stardate 48521.5, directed by Alexander Singer, written by Iris Even Baer and Robert Hewitt Wolf. Original air date, February 6, 1995. When Kira's life is put in jeopardy, Odo expresses the depth of his feelings for her. Meanwhile, back on the station, Nog requests a letter of recommendation to Starfleet. I like this episode, especially... You know, the B story, this is the beginning of Nog's journey to Starfleet. You know, fantastic character development. I really like this episode, especially, you know, the scene with him and Sisko in the office at the end where Nog reveals the real reason why he wants to join Starfleet. And, yeah, so this is, you know, the kind of, for the A story, they kind of brought out what we kind of all suspected, or at least I suspected leading up to this, that Odo had feelings for Kira. And then, not only that, but we got to see the female shapeshifter again. We got to see, you know, just how good of a shapeshifter she truly is, that she can actually impersonate other people, and almost fool Odo. All right, Ragnar, what are your thoughts on this episode?
Oh, I always thought this was a great episode. The whole part with the crystal, you know, you're kind of wondering, okay, what's going on here? And then when they finally reveal, you know, the big twist at the end, I thought, man, that was well done. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and you're right, it is the beginning of of Nog's journey into becoming eventually a Starfleet officer.
Nom 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 Starfleet.
Yeah. I got Rom and Nog mixed up.
Excellent. Curtis, your thoughts?
Definitely an enjoyable episode. I love me a twist ending. Creative too, with the way they had the crystal that just kept growing and growing. I mean, I don't know. To me, I wouldn't have thought of something like that. So that was impressive. And you get to see some of Odo's deductive reasoning. I like it because he sort of like walks you through all of his conclusions, and that's always fun.
Yep.
But have we really been talking about this for 60 episodes?
Yeah.
Holy yes.
Thanks, boys.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to believe. Richard, geez. Your thoughts?
Honestly, it's one of my favorite episodes probably of the season. It's really well done. I'm a big, like, Nog journey fan in general. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, he kills it and I love the emotion that he put into it. Honestly, I kind of feel like, for me at least, the Nog plot was more important to me. From my perspective, we basically knew that Odo was in love with Kira, and I don't understand why the Founders really had to point it out to him in such a way, but I did like the way they did it. And I think I was listening to another thing, and they were saying that because of some budgetary constraints, the growing crystal looked bad because it was basically foam and it just painted it. So unfortunately, they had some budget issues and it looked kind of cheesy. But aside from that, I do enjoy Odo's deductive reasoning skills, though I think it shouldn't have taken him quite as long. But that's just a little nitpick. Aside from that, great episode. One of my favorites of the season.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, when I was watching this the first time, I think I kind of had it figured out that that wasn't Kira. And I figured it was a shapeshifter just because the sound effect, like when the crystal would move up, it was the same sound as a shapeshifting sound. So I kind of had it pegged. I didn't realize it would be the female shapeshifter or anything like that, but.
Wow, that was very sharp of you. I didn't pick up on that.
Yeah, I just remember that. Like, yeah, the sound effect of it. But anyway, so the next episode is episode 61 of the series, 15th of the season, and that is Destiny. Stardate 48543.2, directed by Les Landau, written by David S. Cohen and Martin A. Weiner. Original air date February 13th, 1995. Despite Tracker's Bajoran prophecy of destruction, Sisko assists a joint scientific venture with the Cardassians to open communications through the Bajoran wormhole. Sisko is forced to face his status as emissary seriously in the face of prophecy. This was an all right episode. I remember it mostly for Tracy Scoggins. Playing the female, playing the female Cardassian, probably, you know, in my opinion, the sexiest Cardassian ever. It wasn't a bad episode. It was just, it was just another episode. It was good. Like I said, Tracy Scoggins, beautiful. Curtis, your thoughts.
Was this the one where O'Brien accidentally hit on the female Cardassian?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yep. Awesome. Love that little subplot. It's hilarious. I don't know. I enjoy the episode because Kira makes her assumptions at the beginning. Like, oh, well, the prophecy says this, therefore it is thus and such, and we need to stop this, and oh, my God, this is horrible. And she had obviously no faith in the emissary, and her assumptions sort of worked against her. And we got to see that in action by the end of the episode, of course, where it turned out that like you had it wrong and maybe you should be a little more open-minded. And it was sort of a shake-up by the prophets. Really enjoyed that.
Yeah. Yeah. Richard, your thoughts.
I actually really liked the episode, and I'm a fan of Tracy Scoggins. Very well done with the Cardassian. She was the captain of Babylon 5 for season 5, just FYI, yep, if anybody else didn't know that. She's a good actress, and obviously plays the Cardassian well. The guy that plays Vedic Yarka, he's just literally in everything. That dude... Mm-hmm. I think he was in The Mummy for one of them, and he's just been in so much. Great actor. And I actually really like Bajoran Prophecy episodes, and I just thought it was really cool how they kind of like brought it all together with the three Vipers and the Cardassians and the sword, and you know, just a little bit of, you know, cracking that door open a little bit. And yeah, I actually really enjoyed it. Good episode.
Tracy Scoggins was also Cat Grant in the first season of Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman. That's the first time I remember seeing her. Yeah, awesome. Awesome actors. And Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
Well, you guys have already pretty much covered it, but I was going to say, isn't this the episode with the really hot Cardassian in it?
Hell yeah, dude. Hell yeah, brother.
I think we all have a one-track mind, because that's the only thing we all remember about the episode. yeah, it's a good episode, but the highlight is definitely the hot Cardassian.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. All right, so episode 62, 16th of the season. It is Profit Motive. Stardate 48555.5, directed by René Auberjonois. Written by Ira Stephen Baer and Robert Hewitt Wolf. Original air date February 20th, 1995. Quark discovers that Grand Nagus Zek has written a new, virtuous, and benevolent set of the rules of acquisition, which would put an end to traditional Ferengi ways. Bashir is oddly disturbed when he is nominated for a highly prestigious medical award. Yeah, this was, for me, this was a fun episode. You know, I love Wallace Shawn as Grand Nagus Zek every time he comes on. It's fun. And it was funny to see him playing, yeah, the virtuous and benevolent Grand Nagus Zek, and to see, you know, just how Quark and all of them were having a hard time dealing with it. And who would have thought that it would be Quark that would be, you know, walking with the prophets, you know, after, you know, the pilot, essentially.
Oh, this man, Kira would be so annoyed.
Yeah, like, yeah, he goes, they go into the wormhole, and he barters with them. He deals with them. And then, yeah, the Bashir being nominated for the medical award, that was an all right B story as well. Richard, your thoughts, sir?
It was an all right episode. I think it would have been really cool to see, you know, Bashir win the Carrington Award just because of how, you know, epic it would be, but he's right. You know, it's an end of the life kind of like crowning achievement thing. And yep, just from the beginning, I'm like, nah, F that. There is no way that the rules of acquisition revised for the modern Ferengi will be a thing. That's just not a thing. I knew that was going to change right quick. And I bet you, I just thought of this. Kai Winn has never spoken to the prophets, but Quark has. Can you imagine?
Yeah. Yep.
Well, yeah, decent episode. Yeah, that's all I got to say about that.
And I wonder, like, if Ira Stephen Baer, because, you know, like, he was the showrunner and he kind of was planning things out. I was wondering, I always kind of wondered after the fact, like, when I rewatched this episode, if one of the reasons why Bashir was so concerned was because of the whole genetic engineering thing, if maybe that was something that was in the back of Ira Stephen Baer's mind, that Bashir doesn't want the spotlight on him for maybe that reason.
Yeah.
But that's a couple years away yet. But, you know, something I'd like to ask Ira Stephen Baer if I ever see him again. Ragnar, your thoughts?
I always thought this was an okay episode. As far as the Ferengi ones go, I don't think this was the best of the kind of Ferengi-centric ones, but it was still, you know, fun and entertaining, as the Ferengis always are. I heard that the subplot about Bashir getting the award was based on when Star Trek Next Generation got nominated for an Emmy, and nobody thought they would win, and then all of a sudden they started thinking they were going to win, and then they didn't win. And then apparently the writers, it became a running joke for a long time, and then they eventually made it into one of the subplots. That's what I heard.
No, that's cool. Yeah, that totally makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. The timeline lines up anyways.
I would believe it if somebody told me that, like, I received a bear or something.
Yeah.
Yep. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
The prophets are such trolls, man. Like, 100%. Any random non-Bajoran who just stumbled into the wormhole is granted an audience nearly immediately, just for no reason. I mean, they've only been god figures to these people for tens of thousands of years. No big deal. To hell with the Kai. But we're totally going to talk to this Ferengi bartender, just because. I enjoy the episode just because of that. just based on that premise. I find it really hilarious.
Excellent. All right, so the next episode is episode 63, 17th of the season, and it is Visionary. Stardate 48576.7, directed by Reza Badly.
Honestly, I can't tell. I think it's B-A-D-I-Y-I, and I don't know how to pronounce that. Let's just call them Reza and leave it at that.
Reza. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I apologize. Written by, story by Ethan H. Kalk? Teleplay by John Shirley. Original air date February 27th, 1995. Exposure to radiation causes O'Brien to jump 5 hours into the future for brief periods as Deep Space Nine hosts Romulan and Klingon delegations. Yeah, I always liked this episode. I thought it was neat. You know, O'Brien, of course, O'Brien must suffer.
Agreed.
So, you know, he gets killed and he gets to actually see Bashir performing an autopsy on him. Not just that, but it was cool seeing the Romulans. You know, as far as I can remember, I think this was the first time we saw a Romulan warbird in Deep Space Nine.
I believe so.
I think.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I mean, I've always been a fan of the Romulans, so I was super stoked to see them feature prominently in an episode. So. All right, Ragnar, your thoughts.
Well, the first thing I want to say is, remember when the Romulans looked like Romulans? I couldn't get over in Star Trek Picard how the Romulans didn't look like Romulans anymore. Now they were just Vulcans. That really confused me for a long time, like several episodes in before I realized that, like, oh, those housekeepers are supposed to be Romulans? Oh, I'm so confused.
What you're like? So what is this? Yeah, what is this emotional Vulcan? What the hell?
Yeah, it was that really threw me off. So I'm totally with you that Romulans are awesome, especially when they look like Romulans and act like Romulans. But overall, this is a good episode, but you know, nothing too standout-ish for me. It's good.
Excellent, Curtis, your thoughts, sir.
Unlike Miles O'Brien, I love temporal mechanics. Any episode with time, anything in any Star Trek series, I find to be some of the most fun to watch. Because especially if it's your first time, it's sort of like they rip open all of the strict requirements that most plots have to abide by. Like, you can twist and warp anything when you have a plot that messes with time. Kind of like that season one Voyager episode. Anyway, we're not talking about that. No, super fun. I really like it. And as usual, anytime O'Brien suffers, I'm happy.
Savage.
And Richard, your thoughts, sir?
I actually really enjoy as well, you know, temporal mechanic episodes, just because I have like a personal interest in those kinds of things. Causality loops and temporal mechanics. Like, I find that stuff really fascinating. And I also really like Miles O'Brien as a character, and I like pretty much all of his, like, O'Brien episodes. And, and yeah, like, I also love the D-Daredex. So I love seeing D-Daredex on screen. But yeah, I think it's a really good episode. It's definitely not one that I skip. That's for sure.
Yeah, me too. All right. Well, the next episode is one I have skipped. So you guys might have to refresh my memory a little bit. It's episode 64 of the series, 18th of the season, and it's Distant Voices, Stardate 48592.2, directed by Alexander Singer, story by Joe Manosky, teleplay by Ira Stephen Bear and Robert Hewitt Wolf. Original air date, April 10th, 1995. Approaching his 30th birthday, Julian Bashir is subjected to a telepathic attack by an alien seeking a restricted substance. He wakes up to find the station almost deserted, and he is aging rapidly. Like I said, it's one I think I skipped in my rewatch. It's not, super bad episode. Like, I remember Garrick being great in it, but it's not really Garrick because it's a telepathic dream. You know, kind of reminiscent of, you know, the Dr. Crusher episode from season 4 of TNG where she's on the ship by herself and, you know, shenanigans are going down. It was just another episode for me. Who did I leave off with last time? Curtis, we'll start with you. What are your thoughts?
I like it. There are things I like about it, rather. Obviously, I'm a huge Garrick fan, and you get a lot of Garrick in this episode. I love that. Andrew Robinson is just so comfortable in Garrick's skin. It's a delight to watch him on screen. However, every time I watch this episode, I'm about a year older than I was the last time I watched this episode, and it's really does a good job of reminding me of that. So I sometimes do tend to skip it, but for the most part, yeah, I just like seeing Garrick be such a shit. Despite the fact that he's in Julian's brain, he's still in Garrick.
Yeah. Excellent. Richard, your thoughts?
Like Curtis, I do watch Deep Space Nine about every year, and I remember, I'm like, you know what? This is a good episode. And then I watch it, and I'm like, man, why is that Lethian a badass? And why is Garrick such a Garrick? And then he just overcomes his age. He's like, oh, I broke my hip, but he's still, like, pushing on. But then I think to myself, knowing what I know in the future, it's unusual that somebody survives a Lethian attack. So it's possible that because of his genetic engineering, he was able to survive that attack, which kind of makes you think about that, too. But aside from that, it's a decent episode. Once in a while, I do skip it, depending on how I'm feeling that day, but usually not.
All right. Ragnar.
No, I think it's a pretty solid episode. Lots of good moments with Garrick. And I also always thought that as Bashir ages, he starts to look kind of like Malcolm McDowell.
He kind of does, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I always thought. Like, the older he got, the more he looked like Malcolm McDowell, especially as Malcolm McDowell aged. Like, it's like, oh, wow, that's what Malcolm McDowell looks like. That's kind of funny.
That is his uncle.
Is it?
That, like, Alexander Siddig, that Malcolm McDowell's his uncle.
Oh, well,
oh, wow.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Plot twist. I thought Julian that's Bashir's what I thought. Actually Tolian Soren.
No, it's funny, Ragnar. When you were saying that, I just assumed you were referring that they were related.
No.
No, he actually is his uncle. I can't remember what interview it was an interview I think they did like years ago, where they were talking about it, like when he was doing Star Trek Generations, and then Alexander Siddig was doing Deep Space Nine at the same time. So
cool.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, you learn something new every day, huh?
Yeah.
Sure hope so.
All right. So the next episode is episode 65, 19th of the season, and it's Through the Looking Glass, Stardate 48601.1, directed by Winrich Kolbe, written by Ira Stephen Baron, Robert Hewitt Wolf. Original air date April 17th, 1995. Sisko is convinced by Smiley O'Brien from the Mirror Universe to assume the role of the dead Captain Sisko. Again, like we touched on it in the season two, or at least I mentioned this, I know. I'm not a big fan of the Mirror Universe episodes. I really like the one they did in season two. I really think that when they did that one in season two, they never really intended to go back to it, and then they just did. So I don't know. I just not a terrible episode, but not one of my favorites. You know, seeing Jennifer Sisko again, I guess, was kind of neat. Kind of sucks they killed off Captain Sisko. I think it would have been cool to see Sisko and, you know, versus Sisko, or, you know, Sisko and Sisko team up. I think that would have been cool. But anyway, I
digress. Mortal Kombat match.
Yeah. Richard, your thoughts, sir.
If I'm not mistaken, this is the one where Captain Sisko hooks up with Mirror Universe Dax.
No.
Oh wait, hold on.
I don't remember that.
No, this is the one where they had the Mirror Universe Tuvok in this episode.
No, it definitely is. She slaps him across the face, and
yeah, because this is Sisko's first journey to the other side.
Yeah, yeah, it definitely is. So that's probably the best part of the episode, because you know that Sisko hooked up with Dax. You know, and
I forgot about that.
That's probably the best part of the episode.
Not really true. Sisko hooked up with Jadzia. Was she actually Dax in the Mirror Universe?
Close enough. Okay, let me rephrase. Sisko hooked up with Jadzia. That's all we need to know. So yeah, aside from that, a decent episode, but again, I'm not a big fan of the Mirror Universe episodes in Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, the one thing like I kind of wish they would have done is that, I mean, they had Tim Russ as Tuvok from the Mirror Universe. I wish they would have had him play a bigger role in this episode, if they had him for this episode. You know, like maybe have him, because he's basically only in like two scenes and then you don't see him again. I kind of wish we would have seen a little bit more of him.
Well, because we know, that's a good point. We know from Voyager that Tuvok was indeed serving in Starfleet back when at least the Maroons were the current uniform. Was that after the transporter incident?
Like the transporter incident with Kirk?
Yeah, the original one caused the divergence.
Oh, yeah, probably 20 years after, honestly.
Oh, okay. So I was, well, still, he would have been alive to see, like, the original chain of events, Empire. Right? Like, prior to the divergence. Yeah. So it would have been cool to have more of that character for sure, just if nothing else, because he would have had insights that nobody else that we saw on screen would have had of that time.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a good point. All right. Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
Well, I'm not the hugest fan of the mirror, you know, kind of alternate universe episodes. I did like alternate Kira. She was pretty great. And I guess it was kind of neat to see Jennifer Sisko again. But as a whole, this isn't one of my favorite episodes.
And Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
Well, I've already given a few, but I dig the Mirror Universe episodes, not so much for their plots themselves, although I find them interesting enough. I like seeing the actors have a chance to step outside of their usual character. That's fun for me, because I imagine it must be a little bit of fun for them. When you met René Auberjonois the same year we all did, and he mentioned that was one of his favorite things to do, was play different characters. So to get them, to be able to see them being able to do that, playing a different character while somehow playing the same character, I think it's just really cool and really fun.
Yep. Excellent. All right. The next episode is episode 66 of the series, 20th of the season, and it's Improbable Cause, starting 48620.3, directed by Avery Brooks, story by Robert Letterman and David R. Lawn, teleplay by Rene Echevarria. Original air date, April 24th, 1995. Garrick's tailor shop is bombed, forcing Odo to investigate who is trying to kill the Cardassian exile and why. This is part one of two. I gotta tell you guys, I love this two-parter. You know, I love the mystery of it that takes place in this episode. I love the conclusion. You know, is Garrick going to betray everyone? You know, now that an Aubrantine has brought him back into the fold. You know, I love the callbacks to, you know, the Romulans from Visionary. You know, they were given the data from Starfleet. And also from the episode The Defiant, when, you know, there's that secret Cardassian fleet being constructed. For what purpose? We didn't know. And now we know. Now it's being paid off. And, see, and I don't know, it's just a geek in me. But seeing a Cardassian ship, I know this is getting ahead, this is part two, but seeing a Cardassian ship cloak and decloak is, it was cool. I was pretty psyched about that. Ragnar, what are your thoughts on part one?
Oh, I loved it. It's a Garrick-centric episode, and Garrick is one of the most fascinating and fun-to-watch characters in Deep Space Nine, so it's pretty much a no-brainer. This is going to be a great episode.
Absolutely. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
I don't even know where to start. Love this two-parter. Ragnar hit the nail on the head. Garrick's so much fun to watch, and you get to see him, of course, in the second part, you get to see him sort of back in his original element, and that's cool, too. But it's also, it's kind of fascinating that they don't outright explain to you that this is the fleet that was hiding in that system from the Thomas Riker episode. Was that last season or the season before?
No, it was this season.
Okay, but yeah, like yeah. As far as I know, they don't outright tell you in this episode that this is what Thomas Riker kind of uncovered, and this was sort of the idea that they were going for with the Obsidian Order working with the Tal Shiar and yada yada. And, oh God, the whole premise is just so damn fascinating.
Absolutely, Richard, your thoughts, sir.
Well, not much more can be said, but I love Odo's investigation methods and how he was basically trolling the Flaxian and, you know, trying to figure out if he did it or not. And, you know, when I first watched it, I remember being young and not thinking that, like, oh, maybe Garrick blew up his shop until they said it. And I'm like, ooh, Garrick, that's my boy. Like, just, no, he knows, like, he's got some serious shit. Like, dude's genius like that. And, yeah, fantastic episode. I love anything to do with Tal Shiar, Obsidian Order, Section 31, and, you know, Klingon intelligence never got enough of screen time, which I was really sad about, because it'd be really interesting to see, like, what would a Klingon spy really be like, you know? Like, fantastic episode, and I really dig it. And Curtis is right. I don't know how many people actually noticed, but the ships that came out of, I forget the name of the sector, but he did. He uncovered that whole thing. And, you know, I really wish that Starfleet would have done more with those sensor records, because Obsidian Order is not supposed to have ships, right? So that's kind of a big deal. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Excellent. And I just want to also, like you mentioned, like when the revelation that Garrick blew up his own shop, I love that scene. When they're in Odo's office and he throws it out there, you blew up your own shop.
Oh, and Renee, you know, delivers and then, it so and then, perfectly.
Yes, exactly. And then at the end of the episode, when Garrick admits it to an Auburn Tane, like, fantastic. Like, it's so awesome. All right, so let's get into part two. So it's episode 67 of the series, 21 of the season. The die is cast. Stardate 48622.5, directed by David Livingston. Written by Ronald D. Moore. Original air date, May 1st, 1995. Garrick reluctantly tortures Odo for information to prove his loyalty to his former mentor, an Auburn Tane, as the joint Tal Shiar / Obsidian Order attack on the Founders in the Omerian Nebula is underway, without Starfleet's involvement. Part 2 of 2. All right. So, fantastic episode. Definitely one of my favorites of the season. I can't say enough great things about Andrew Robinson and Rene Auberjonois, their chemistry together. I love, you know, as much as I love Garrick and Bashir, you know, hanging out and stuff, I love Garrick and Odo. You know, I love that Odo's the investigator, Garrick's the guy with the secrets, and Odo's trying to figure him out. I love that. You know, you really felt for Garrick in this episode. You know, he didn't want to have to torture Odo, but he was doing it because he wants to go back to his old life, or at least he thinks he does. And as we find out in a couple seasons, you know, part of the reason probably was, you know, why he was trying to impress and not retain so well is because that's his dad. You know, so he's trying to get his, you know, fatherly approval. Like I said, we don't find that out until season 5. And yeah, the special effects were just amazing. It was awesome seeing Sisko defying Starfleet orders and, you know, taking the Defiant into the Gamma Quadrant to save Garrick and Odo. What else is there to say? I love the, you know, the scenes with Eddington. And I like that that admiral. Like, this is the first time we've seen, like, a Starfleet admiral that was in a yellow uniform, which I thought was kind of cool because he's the head of Starfleet security.
I was totally going to see that. I don't know if anybody else noticed that.
Yeah, I always wish we would have saw more of that. You know, like I in Star Trek Picard, we did see Commodore O in a yellow uniform,
and it sucked.
You know, yeah. So I guess, you know, they you know, that is. I guess that is one of the positives of Picard, that they did actually kind of do right, was the uniform. But yeah, no, I thought that was really cool. I like that admiral. I wish he would have came back a little bit more, but you know, it is what it is. Ragnar, what are your thoughts, sir?
Oh yeah, this might be the best single episode in the season, or at least top three. Like, this is a great episode. Mm-hmm. And watching it for the very first time, I was super curious about everything to do with the Founders. So, you know, this is a very exciting episode. And then, yeah, you really feel for Garrick. He's caught between a rock and a hard place. And, yeah, it was a good episode. Yeah, this is a good one.
Yeah, absolutely. I will say this is my favorite episode of the season, without a doubt. I loved it. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
Man, what else is there to say? It's definitely my favorite season of the episode. It's got everything that I you don't get in other Trek. You've got Garrick, you've got the cloak and dagger thing.
Richard, your thoughts, sir?
You know what? You mentioned earlier about the Cardassian ship decloaking and cloaking. Yep. That just knocked my socks off. You know what I mean? Just love it. I actually kind of enjoy Cardassian ships, not the color as much, but just the style of ships. I do like them. And the juice that Garrick and Inabran drink in the office at the beginning just looked really cool, and they were talking about it. That's a side note. But actually, I really liked Colonel Lovok. He was a kind of a small part, but I enjoyed his part of the episode. And just how deep it got between Garrick and Odo during the quote-unquote interrogation. It was painful to watch because you know that Garrick didn't want to do it, but he had to do something to sort of like prove his loyalty. And, you know, Odo had to open up, and he's a very closed-off kind of person. I feel like I probably take after him more than I should in a lot of ways. But probably the best two-parter in the season, maybe even the best episode of the season. But it was a really good episode. I really liked it. And I did think it was really cool that Vice Admiral Todman had, you know, the gold-colored uniform, because I think that was one of the first times you got to see that in Star Trek. I thought it was badass because that means that, you know, you don't have to be, quote unquote, you know, command line to go into Admiralty. So I just thought that was really cool.
Yeah, that's what I kind of wondered, because, you know, go jumping ahead in the season finale, like Eddington and Sisko have that conversation about, you know, like, you can't be a captain wearing a yellow uniform, and Sisko says, well, you could always switch to command. But But then, but what was the Admiral then? You know, like, you know, I don't know. But I do want to mention, too, before we move on, I really like the actor that plays in Aubertine, and Paul Dooley. I really like him. He's I thought was perfect in that role. Anyway, next episode. Episode 68, 22 of the season, and that's Explorers. Stardate 48699.9, directed by Cliff Boyle. Story by Hilary J. Bader. Teleplay by Renee Echevarria. Original air date May 8, 1995. Sisko builds a replica of an ancient Bajoran space vessel, and with Jake attempts to prove that the Bajorans developed interstellar travel before Cardassians. Bashir frets over the impending visit of a classmate who graduated first in his class at Starfleet Medical Academy. Trivia note, this was the first appearance of Commander Sisko's beard. This was a fun episode. I like the Sisko, or the Ben Sisko and Jake Sisko dynamic. I love the father and son interaction. I thought it was a neat project for Sisko to undertake. I liked it when Sisko, you know, had the beard and goatee thing going on. I think, facial hair suits Avery Brooks. So yeah, it was a good episode. Curtis, your thoughts?
Yeah, the beard kind of steals the stage in this one a little bit, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The idea of the ship that they built was super fascinating to me. I remember because I was at that age when this was airing. I believe I was probably in grade 6 or 7. But anyway, I was really, really into Trek. I was watching these episodes as they were airing. And, I was very interested in astronomy and space and all that kind of stuff. So this one really spoke to me, like, because it wasn't a futuristic warp-powered vessel. It was like they threw together a sailboat, essentially, and took it into frickin' space. How awesome is that? So, I mean, I remember being just fascinated by that. And I'm happy if that's the only impression that this episode ever leaves on me.
Excellent. Richard, your thoughts, sir?
I, too, actually really liked this episode. My dad, in the past, has always helped me work on cars, and we've worked on, like, his vehicles. So this kind of, like, spoke to me in that, like, you know, Jake and his dad are... For our interpretation, is building a classic ride. You know what I mean? Like, dude's building like a 1972 friggin' Pontiac GTO. Like, this is badass. But I always wondered, how did they get it from the ground into space? I wish they would have gone more into detail on that. Like, do they have rockets? Or are they, like, you know, chilling in their own star system all the time? I wish they could have gone into more detail about that. But fantastic episode. And I kind of like, if you look at Sisko with the beard and hair, his head looks different than beard with no hair. Like, it just, the whole shape seems to change. And yeah, just finally, like, I'm glad they let him do that because it totally suits him. I'm a big fan of facial hair. I've always had facial hair, so almost always. But yeah, fantastic episode. And it's also the episode where Bashir hooks up with Lita. So, yeah, that's a good time.
Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
Well, that's a really good point that Richard raised. I never thought about that. How did the ancient Bajorans actually get the thing into space? Interesting. Honestly, this isn't one of my favorite episodes. It's not a bad episode, but I tend to skip it when I rewatch because it just, it's kind of slow and it just, it's not that important of an episode. But it's not technically bad or anything.
Excellent. All right, so the next episode is episode 69 of the series, 23rd of the season, Family Business. Stardate 48731.2, directed by Rene Auberjonois, written by Ira Stephen Baer and Robert Hewitt Wolf, May 15th, 1995. One thing to note is this is the second episode this season, I believe, directed by Rene Auberjonois, and they're both Ferengi episodes. Quark returns to his home planet to confront his mother, Mugi, after hearing that the Ferengi Commerce Authority, that she has broken the law by earning profit. Sisko meets Cassidy Yates as a romantic interest, which Sisko has discovered his son has told most of the station about. Brunt is also introduced. Yeah, I love this episode. I love the character of Mugi. Even though she's played by a different actress in this episode, I think both actresses did a great job. And I love, of course, Brunt. You know, Brunt FCA, like, fantastic. I love Brunt. And yeah, and Cassidy Yates, you know, she's a character that I really like. You know, I thought it was great that, you know, Star Trek finally, was gonna give the captain, you know, or at this point in his career, commander, the lead of the series, a romantic interest that would, you know, kind of stick around. And he'd eventually marry, you know, unfortunately, we never got that with Kirk. We never got that with Picard. I like that we got that with Sisko, especially her. You know, like, I really like that character. Richard, what are your thoughts?
I enjoy it. It is, I guess, probably about time that some female on Franginar decided to do something about a complete lack of, like, female rights. So, like, she's basically the first, I guess, Ferengi feminist of some sort. And I like the way they did it. You know, it's kind of going back to the idea of, like, how we talk about, like, progressiveness and how they write it in well, and it's not in a very forceful manner, and it's just done well. I appreciate it. Also, Cassidy Yates, fantastic actress, and also very attractive. And finally, Sisko, you know, meets a nice lady, which is good. And, yeah, aside from that, like, good episode. I enjoy it. I enjoy a lot of Ferengi, specific episodes. So definitely a good one.
And I just wanted to point that Mugi, Ishka, for this episode was, played by Andrea Martin. Who is best known for her work on the television series SCTV, which was filmed in Edmonton.
I remember that show. That was a good show. That was John Candy would play, like, the Incredible Bulk. And,
yep.
Oh, yeah, so good.
Yep, John Candy, Eugene Levy, Catherine O'Hara. Yeah, they're quite a good group of people. But, yeah, and SCTV actually used to be filmed in Global Studios. Back in the day. All right, Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
Oh, I love this episode. I thought it was a great episode. Definitely one of the better, you know, mostly Ferengi episodes. And I just wanted to mention that I just absolutely adore Cassidy Yates. I think she's, you know, wonderful. And yeah, I totally fell in love with her as a little boy. And watching the Orville, I'm still in love with the actress that plays her now. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, great episode.
Excellent. And Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
Super cool episode for many reasons. They've already been touched on, but I'll just say Jeffrey Combs is far and away my favorite Star Trek actor of all time. And Brunt is my favorite character of Jeffrey Combs. He's just so much fun to watch. He's such a bastard. But he's so good at it. And just the way Jeffrey Combs delivers Brunt to us is so brilliant. I'm giddy every time Brunt's on the screen. I don't like Brunt as a character, obviously, because you're not supposed to, but I love him as a character. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. I feel the same way.
Totally. And just back with a little bit on what Richard was saying about, like, how Moogie's sort of the pioneer of the, you know, equal rights movement on Ferenginar. It's important because that obviously comes into effect as we go down the line, later in later seasons and stuff. So that's got Ira Stephen Bear's fingerprints all over it. with his forethought in some of his storylines. So that was, it's cool to see the beginning of that and how it all plays out.
Yeah, exactly. And I think when he was in Vulcan when that time, I think that's when he mentioned, or maybe I've seen it in an interview he did, where he said, like, on TNG, he hated the Ferengi. Like, he hated having to write them in to episodes. Like, he just thought they were, you know, one-dimensional. They weren't funny. And then, yeah, when he got to Deep Space Nine, he really fleshed them out. He really made them more than just, you know, one-note, you know, alien race. Like, you know, there was definitely more to them. And yeah, in this episode, we get to see the Ferengi homeworld. We get to see, you know, Quark's childhood home. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. All right, so for the next episode, it's episode 70 of the series, 24th of the season, and it is Shakaar. Stardate 48764.8, directed by Jonathan West, written by Gordon Dawson. Original air date, May 22nd, 1995. Kaiwan needs Kira to convince the former Resistance leader Shakaar, now a farmer on Bajor, to return soil reclamators needed elsewhere in Rakantha, which used to be Bajor's most productive agricultural region. Honestly, this is one I skip. Not a big fan of this episode, to be honest with you. I found it quite boring. Yeah, and I don't really have much more to say. So, Ragnar, I'll pass it off to you. What are your thoughts?
I don't think this is a stellar episode. It's not terrible. It was kind of neat to see some of, like, Kira's old Resistance fighters. And it does explore, you know, one of the themes that DS9 was so great about exploring, which is, you know, making people do things they don't want to do. You know, there's a lot of conflicted interests. Like, obviously, Kira wants what's best for Bajor, but also, obviously, she doesn't want to do anything for Kaiwan. So, you know, as far as this episode goes, it's not the greatest episode, but, you know, overall, it does have some good moments.
Agreed. Curtis, your thoughts?
Yeah, it's, you know, when I binge Deep Space Nine, from time to time, it's nice to take a little nap break, you know, just have a little snooze, recharge your batteries a little bit. And this is a great episode to play in the background while I'm curled up on the couch with like a little blanket. And then, yeah, I sleep through it, honestly.
Excellent. Richard, your thoughts?
Mostly the same. I thought it was an interesting episode. It also kind of gives more, say it gives you a view into Kaiwan a bit early on, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think she was trying to go for First Minister as well as Kai, and I like the idea of separating church from state. Definitely like a nuanced mm-hmm. statement, but just like in its simplest form, like I don't believe that the Pope should be also the like the military leader of a country, things like that. So mm-hmm. I'm glad that they kind of went into that a little bit just to show that, yes, okay, the Kai is separate from the government, even though they do sometimes agree on things and they consult and stuff like that. But aside from that, a decent episode, mostly a background episode, but aside from that, it was all right.
I'd just like to clarify Excellent. One thing before we move on. Some of these episodes Sure. I label as my designated nap episodes. I want to make it really clear that I really appreciate that there are nap episodes. It's just I would have to stop watching, take a nap, and then resume watching without them. And this way I don't have to leave the couch. I absolutely appreciate these episodes.
Well, Curtis, do you watch this on Netflix, though?
Most of the time, yes.
So, okay, so whenever you're in one of your nap episodes, does it ever actually stop and do that thing where are you still watching?
Sometimes.
And then you wake up from your nap and you're like, damn it.
Sometimes.
I got half the episode.
But I've got a way around okay. that. At the beginning of the episodes that I know are going to be nap episodes, I exit back out yeah. to the menu and I start playing the episode so that I know I have an episode and a half before it's going to do that to me. Yeah. So.
Excellent. I was going to say, that's genius. Absolutely genius.
Well, thank you. I try.
All right, so the next episode is episode 71 of the series, 25th of the season, and that's Facets. Stardate 48959.1, directed by Cliff Bohl, written by Renee Echevarria. Original air date, June 12, 1995. Jadzia Dax deals with feelings of inferiority as she encounters past hosts in a trill, Zantara.
Zantara.
Zantara, okay, excellent. Ceremony, which is able to transfer the memories of former hosts into another recipient. And Odo takes the role of Curzon Dax during the experience. This was a fun episode. Props to Rene Auberjonois for, you know, he's really the Brent Spiner of DS9. Like, when it comes to taking his character in different directions, you know, like when they, you know, like Brent Spiner, you know, played Data, of course, you know, the emotionless android. But then they would write a story where you saw him, you know, his acting range, right? When you got to see him act out of character. And occasionally they do that with Odo as well. And I really liked this episode because you got to see a different, you know, you get this, you know, it's Odo / Curzon, but you get to see Rene Auberjonois play it in a different way, which I found very refreshing. I thought it was very cool. And it speaks to, you know, Rene Auberjonois as an actor, how great he is. But yeah, this was a fun episode. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
Well, just another note on Rene Auberjonois. It had to be him. He had to be the Brent Spiner because when we met him in Vulcan, he talked about how he used to teach at Juilliard for a bit. And one of the things he always liked the most about his job was that he was a character actor and he got to try out a bunch of different roles. And with Odo, he was sort of, despite playing a changeling, was sort of confined to this, like, one. Yeah. You know, Odo was kind of two-dimensional when we first met him, let's be honest. But, of course, that was important because we got to see him grow and expand as time went on, which was cool. But as far as the episode itself goes, it was super cool to see Curzon on the screen, and I'm glad it was Rene Auberjonois that got to be Curzon, even though he was sort of like Curzon Odo yep. Dax, maybe. Or I don't know if that even makes sense, but super enjoyable episode to watch. I liked seeing Nana Visitor be able to play a different character, which is always fun because, I mean, who doesn't like Mira Kira? It's fun to see her play around with different characters. Watching Armin Shimmerman play a female while wearing Quark's body was cool as well. I think Armin Shimmerman doesn't get enough credit a lot of times. So it's such a fun episode. I don't know what else to say.
Excellent. Richard, your thoughts, sir?
I love this episode because it really does show off a lot of different talent chops from a lot of the actors and actresses on this show. I mean, Lita played one of them. You know, she got to, like, jump around and be gymnastic-y. And Miles just playing that, like, neurotic character was fantastic. And it really goes to show how strong the Curzon personality is. The moment he gets into that body, it changes to look like him. Like, I think we've talked about this before, but how powerful the Curzon personality is in Dax. And this just shows it. Like, he just owns it. Like, he's the man.
Well, and that can also give us insight into the inner workings of, like, how a changeling determines their own form. Maybe I'm the only weird one who likes to think about that kind of thing. But
yeah, and also, the B-plot with Nog working towards his Starfleet journey, I enjoyed that as well. You get to see him in the runabout on the holosuite. Honestly, top three favorite episodes of the season. I would probably wager that for sure.
Awesome. Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
I have one little quibble with this episode, which maybe you guys could explain. How come the guy who hijacked the Trill didn't appear as one of her previous hosts?
I have a theory.
Like, I know he was only a host for whatever it was, a few hours or a few days, but wouldn't he still show up as... Because she said that she had all of his memories and his life was very sad.
I think it only if it's requested. So during the Jantara process, they say the name of the host and they're like, yep, we're going to bring that one out. At that point in time, I don't think they were even aware of... Oh, Curtis, what's the guy's name again?
No. Sisko played Jiran. Sisko took Jiran. I know what you're saying. But Curzon's Jantara did not include Jiran because he was like the hidden host, right? Like he was sort of stuffed away in a psychological closet of the Dax symbiont. So maybe that guy that Ragnar is referring to hadn't bonded with the Dax symbiont long enough because, I mean, you know, even my SSD writes 6 gigs a second, but there's a lot of gigs in a brain, you know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah.
So either that, or perhaps it was just suppressed. If nobody wants to acknowledge it, then you know. I just said his name.
Jiran.
Yeah. I mean, if nobody acknowledges him, then he doesn't. I mean, why would Jadzia want to talk to him again? Really.
Okay. Yeah. That's a good theory. That always bothered me watching the episode. Was like. You know, that wasn't included, but anyways, yeah.
Totally a good question to ask, though.
So, Ragnar, are you just referring to Jiran, or are you referring to that guy who took the Dax symbiont?
Yeah, no, the guy who took, I think his name was Varad.
Oh, Varad. Oh, yeah. I don't know if that would count, honestly. Like, you had it for like an hour.
Yeah. Yeah, but she still said that she had his memories, so... If she had his memories, then it should still be viable.
Well, I think she could have. Sorry, go ahead, Chris.
Well, I was going to say maybe she just didn't feel the need because he's still alive, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like the whole point of the ceremony is to meet the hosts
who are dead
that you don't get to meet. So, I mean, she could just give him a call, right?
Yeah. Well, okay, that's another good point. Yeah, yeah.
If he is still alive, then it would stand to reason that he didn't bond with the symbiont long enough to, so that severing from the symbiont would result in death. Mm. So yeah, that's a good point too.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, some good theories there. Otherwise, yeah, it was a great episode. I enjoyed it. It was fun to see all the regular cast, you know, being different people. That was fun. Mm-hmm.
Excellent. All right, so now we're at the season finale. This is episode 72 of the series, 26th of the season, and it's The Adversary. Stardate 489-62.5, directed by Alexander Singer, written by Ira Stephen Baer and Robert Hewitt Wolf. Original air date June 19th, 1995. Ambassador Krajanski informs newly promoted Captain Sisko that there has been a coup on Zenketh. He orders Sisko to take the Defiant to the nearby Federation colonies to show the flag and keep the Zenkethi quiet. A changeling hides on board the Defiant and sabotages the ship. Alright, so, first off, if I remember correctly, I believe the guy who plays the Ambassador is also the guy that played the Cardassian dad, that like when Kira got turned into a Cardassian. I think that's the same actor. Leggett Parn? No. Lawrence
T'Kenny.
Lawrence Pressman.
Leggett
T'Kenny, yes.
His first name's T'Kenny.
Okay, I'm just going to look it up real quick. Yes, Lawrence Pressman. Yep, same actor. So yeah, that was something I always noticed. And what else is there? The Zenkethi. as far as I know, we never actually see the Zenkethi ever, do we?
No, and they've even talked about, they had a Zenkethi episode in TNG, and they've never been talked about, they've never really been talked about, and there's no pictures, nothing.
See, and I would, you know, like, not to talk too much about new Star Trek, but this is something they could do. You know, like, instead of turning the Klingons into orcs, you know, they could have the Zenkethi. Like, show a completely new race that has already been referred to in Star Trek, but not seen before.
Yep.
But anyway, I digress. I like this episode. It was a lot of fun. You know, I don't know what it is about Bashir. Like, the changelings just love to impersonate him. You know, O'Brien must suffer, but Bashir must also suffer at the hands of changelings, it seems. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And I loved how the episode opened where Sisko's giving his final commander's log. Because I remember, you know, when that first came on, I remember thinking, shit, is Avery Brooks leaving the show? Like, you know, what's going on? And then to see him get promoted, I was just totally ecstatic. He should have been a captain right from day one. And I believe Ira Stephen-Bear even said that he didn't like that they just made him a commander. He should have been a captain. But it was an awesome development for the show, anyway. All right, so Richard, your thoughts on this episode?
You know, I've got some nitpicks about this episode. I did enjoy it, but when you think about it logically for a second, why is the ambassador giving him his marching orders, and why isn't, like, what did he not confirm it with Starfleet? Because Starfleet would have been like, why the hell are you going to go there? And I don't know. I think that was a little bit of a stretch in the plot.
Extreme
there.
Strained credulity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it just seems to me like it could have been done a little bit better. But aside from that, there's, like, it's a good episode. And, you know, Odo basically, like, overpowered a legit changeling who probably knows more than he does about changing and things like that. So that was pretty cool to see. I did actually really appreciate that they let Jake pin the pip on him, you know, cause they're so close, and it was just like a really good, like, father son scene. Excuse me. And yeah, I just thought it was like a great way to end the season. And, yeah, aside from that, and, like, Eddington was in it, you know, he did well, mm-hmm. And then they kind of, like, had to fight around the ship and look for the changeling and stuff. Yeah, really good episode, aside from all that.
Well, and if I remember correctly, I think this is the first time we ever see the Defiant engine room. And we actually, this is the first time I think we actually got this, you know, kind of weave in and out of the Defiant a little bit. So I appreciated that fact. But yeah, I totally get what you're saying about the nitpicks. Yeah, that didn't make a lot of sense. But one thing I will say, like the final line that Odo delivers, you know, when he says, you know, when he tells Sisko the changeling said, "You're too late. We're everywhere." You know, like that was awesome. Like that was like a uh-oh moment. Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
I agree with what Richard was saying. I thought it was a pretty good episode. I was so happy that Sisko finally made captain. It didn't bother me, per se, that he was a commander, but as soon as they made him a captain, you're like, yeah, they should have done that a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And I, of course, loved the bit at the end where Odo kills the other changeling because, you know, didn't quite see that one coming. And, of course, that has some major ramifications down the road.
Yep, absolutely. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
I'm going to be the nail that sticks out. I completely agree with the decision to start Commander Sisko out as a commander. Captains have their own ships. I don't think, to my brain, it doesn't make sense that you would have a captain being assigned to a space station. Maybe I'm crazy. Maybe there's precedent. As far as I know, there's not. Someone correct me. But I think it makes sense. Do I think that Sisko, the character, earned his promotion many times over by the time he got it? Totally. Absolutely he did. But because it took so long, it was almost more gratifying when it finally happened. It was cool. They were waiting for him to grow a beard is what it was. Other than that, I love a Scooby-Doo ending. I know it's Star Trek, but it's completely Scooby-Doo by the end. When you've got the two Odo-looking changelings in the engine room. And I'm the real insert generic main sequence cast character here. Shoot that generic villain. You know, all it was missing was a montage where they were running around in a corridor, going through different doors and coming out other ones. You know what I mean? The old Scooby-Doo chase. so I got a kick out of that. And, of course, just the foreboding at the end, you're too late, we're everywhere. Who didn't like that? Come on now.
Yep. Yeah, definitely left. Like I said, Deep Space Nine didn't have, you know, cliffhangers per se, but they always left you thinking, like, what's to come, right?
It was almost as good. Sorry to interrupt. It was almost as good as the end of whichever season it is where Odo's, the one where he gets turned into a solid and he says, Gowron's a changeling. That was a hell of a cliffhanger for me.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. Yeah, that's next season. Yep. All right. Well, yeah, this is the end of season three. Overall, like I said, I really enjoyed the season. You know, like I really felt that this was, like I said, halfway through season two, I think they started coming into their own, and then this was the season that I think really solidified Deep Space Nine as a great Star Trek series. And then, of course, season four, like, I can't wait to start talking about season four, because that's when they really kick it in high.
Yeah, season four is where this show really hit its stride, I think.
Hell yeah, brother.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think that it has a lot to do, not solely, of course, but a lot to do with the addition of Ira Stephen Bear, because he wasn't really there from the beginning, and he sort of started to have more influence in season three, and then you really got to see things take off in season four. Like, obviously season three sort of carved out the niche that, like, this is what Deep Space Nine will occupy in the Trekverse. And then, of course, yeah, I can't wait to talk about season four. But I think Ira Stephen Bayer definitely deserves a good portion of credit for the continuity and the plot line's fortitude going forward.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, he was there in season one and two, but Michael Piller was the showrunner for season one.
Yes.
Season three is when Ira took over as showrunner. And yeah, you could definitely tell. And apparently that was the plan all along, like when they brought Ira Stephen Bear to Deep Space Nine, because he was on season three of TNG and then he left. And then Michael Piller convinced them to come back for Deep Space Nine. And he told him, like, you know, the first two seasons, you know, you'll kind of work under me, and then season three you'll take over. And he did. And yeah, like you said, like, you really noticed the change. And he's a great guy. Brilliant.
And super cool in person. And he almost bought some rings off of Ragnar. I remember that.
Yeah.
He should have.
I remember that
when
I met him at Vulcan, I told him that he looked like Rob Halford from Judas Priest. And he immediately said, yeah, but I'm straight.
For real, though.
So obviously it wasn't the first time somebody had told him that.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, super nice guy. Awesome guy. Actually, you know, everyone that I met from Deep Space Nine has been super nice. Because that was the same year that Sirach was there.
That was a good year. I just pulled out my pictures.
Yeah, that was a good year.
I just pulled out my pictures, I've got them all. Like, I'm getting them. I'm going to frame them up and hang them, and I'll show you guys later. But, yeah, that was a good year.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there's no Vulcan this year. I'm very sad about that. I was really hopeful.
Tim Russ, man. Oh, that would have been so cool.
Yeah, I have never had the opportunity to meet Tim Russ, so I was very excited about that.
Fingers crossed.
COVID happened.
Yep.
Yes, fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
And as of right now, the Edmonton Expo has not been canceled, but I really don't think it's going to happen.
Or if it does happen, they probably won't have celebrities.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
It's really hard to say how that's all going to go. But.
It is, yeah. But anyway, let's play that little game of where can we find you on the internet. And Ragnar, where can we find you, sir?
Well, it's pretty easy. I'm at ragnarthetrader.com, your source for everything Viking, especially drinking horns.
Awesome. Curtis, where can we find you, sir?
Still hiding for the time being. I've spent the last couple of weeks moving into my new place, so I haven't really had a chance to do much. I'm still looking at getting a blog going at some point, but... I'll just throw in a little endorsement for Ragnar. I ordered an item from him the day after our last podcast, I think, and it arrived very promptly. Excellent, oh, excellent. Service. And okay. I got a little pin with some runes on it as well to go with my order. Never been disappointed with Ragnar stuff.
Well, thank you very much, man.
Fantastic. And Richard, where can we find you, sir?
Instagram, YouTube, Monk Lifts, but just another good plug for RagnarTheTrader.com. Get some.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Thanks, guys.
And you can check out my blog at randomnerdness.blogspot.com. And, yeah, there will be more episodes of the Deep Space Nine discussion panel coming in the not-too-distant future. Like I said, we'll be... Our next episode will be season 4.0, so we'll be talking about the first 13 episodes of season 4. So on behalf of myself, Chris Lockhart, and Ragnar, and Curtis Holloway, and Richard Szabo, I want to thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to listen to the Pop Culture Pub podcast. This was our Deep Space Nine discussion of season 3.5, and we will see you again in the not-too-distant future.